Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks for listening in on the Wise Women Radio Show. I have a special guest, and that is Gwen Holden Berry, who is also doing Here Be Monsters Radio Show and Roundtree 7, and she's also the creator of Daughters of Isis. So, Gwen, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day. What a perfect song.
That was Flash's second song that I uploaded last week to the show and didn't get to play it because I could only figure out how to play one. So that was the second one, and it's one of my favorites by her. It's got some pretty racy lyrics, but I love the song, and I love I just love all the music that she does. She's a fantastic musician. But we've got a lot to talk about. This week, especially today, was really heavy on news content. And I'm actually looking at something that broke just recently, but maybe what our listeners would like to hear is how, and I would like to know, too, because I've never asked you, how did Here Be Monsters and Roundtree 7 get created?
Well, Roundtree 7 is kind of a spontaneous combustion between David Williams and Al O'Siri and myself and David's wife, Morgan. We were all working on another blog together, and we just figured out we weren't really going in the same direction that the blog owner was, and I was the first to bow out. It was kind of a Obama bot kind of place, and it got a little political, you know, but it's supposed to, but it wasn't very friendly, so I backed away, and then David and Oso did. And I know you've read some of Oso's stuff. I mean, singularly, he is expressing what is going on, not just in the Occupy movement, but what's going on politically in our country and with all of the different people of color and all the different groups. And he's extraordinarily kind man who has a specific lens he writes with. And with any one of his small stories, you understand what it is to be on the receiving end, say, of a drone attack, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And David is a very technical and scientific, being a science engineer, he's extraordinarily talented at writing that kind of thing up. Anything nuclear, what's going on bad with the environment. His wife isn't bad at it either. And he's also got a lens that has a huge heart to it, too. So these guys, and Mike Stimson, who is he's actually a stringer, a writer in Canada. He's up in Ontario. So we all got together and created Roundtree 7. The name came from David. And he knows the special secret meaning. We don't yet. We will one day. And of the name. And Here Be Monsters I created because I just needed a place to come and speak and ask all of my pals who were writing online and who were activists like us, and including you and like Cherie and Trisha and other people, Linda St. Martin, just anyone I could reach out to and get onto the airwaves, because I think that, you know, banging the drum and bringing up the awareness, activism, my life is one of, I walk a spiritual walk, you know, that's what I do. And it's every bit a part of being an activist. Like Starhawk, and yourself too. It all comes together. So Here Be Monsters came together that way. It was a Sunday talk show, and then I realized that I had other days, and I was lucky enough to get you and Manny Jalonsky to come and do shows, and, you know, that's how it got going.
Ah, and what about, tell us what you do with Daughters of Isis and how that came to be and what services you provide with that particular business that you're doing.
Happy to. In 1991, my sister and I began Daughters of Isis as a little metaphysical, a little witch shop, if you will, in Pompano Beach, Florida, a little bit south of where I am now. And my sister actually created the largest apothecary in the state. She had over 300 jars of herbs, fungi, flowers. I mean, just everything in there. And that's how I got started with what I began doing, which was I put my hands in the jars, and I could hear the divas. I could hear what they were good for. In other words, the plant consciousness communicated with me. And, of course, my thing is everything that I experience on the unseen levels, I always bring hermetic, you know, bring it down to the seen world. And my way of doing that is to begin studying and learning everything I could about it. And I had folks come through the door asking for essential oils, which, you know, you want to please your customers. And so I brought the oils in, and when I got the oils in, I learned quickly by doing a lot of studying and experimenting and whatnot. What was the good thing? What was the not so good thing? What was the in between? And believe it or not, I felt a very intimate communication with the plant medicines in those oils. They get my bloodstream, and I shift like we all do. For me, it was a natural reach to become more ethnobotanically oriented with them, because for me, most of my life I had studied cultures and the spiritual expression of cultures, and I married that to my love, my new love of the plants and the scents, and I started to blend to create with indigenous scents, indigenous to specific cultures, like the Native American nations. My first teachers were, one was a Chickasaw, and his wife is, my grandmother is an Onondaga grandmother. And basically what I did was I began to understand the culture and the meanings of the different, you know, traditions of the ancestors, which, of course, led me into understanding that cosmic vision that they had that we so desperately need to renew right now to heal our planet. So I think I sidetracked a little bit, but did I give you a good capsule there?
Yeah, that pretty much answers it, because yeah, I was curious how all that got started, and I'm sure other people are too. It's funny that you used in the description of Roundtree 7 and the different people involved in that, you used the word, the descriptive word lens, and I don't know if you saw the promo I did. There's a picture of me, and you can see my arm out with the camera at the end of it and my glasses, because I'm taking a picture of myself. And then there's the picture of you and sitting in the car with the camera. And I thought, that's an interesting descriptive word, because that's exactly what I put in the promo. But yeah, I know, you know, like you like the journalism end of it. And I've always, you know, I grew up pretty much with radio and in a media family. My father owned several radio stations, so it's kind of interesting how this has all turned out, and here I am with my own radio. I never could break into radio when I was younger, but now, because of the internet, we have that opportunity. We can all have our own radio show if we want, so that's worked out really well for me.
Well,
so,
it's the day of the citizen journalist, you know. I actually, when I got out of school, that's what I first did. I went into journalism as my trade, and I worked on the Sun Sentinel down here in Florida. I was a photographer, and I took notes for other writers. You pay your dues, you know. And,
right.
Finally, I worked on a small weekly newspaper up in the mountains of North Carolina for a while, and then my mom crossed in 88, and it was after that. But all my life I was interested, of course, in all things in the unseen realm as well as the seen world. So what makes it tick? What are the dynamics of eternity? That was my question, you know?
Right, right. So I find it interesting that I've kind of gone past, you know, my age of working as a young person, and now we're both wise women, but here I am kind of fulfilling my dreams that I wasn't able to do when I was younger.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
So
I
feel like I've come full circle in that regard. But let's talk a little bit about the news, because there was one thing that just bounced out at me maybe about an hour ago. I happened to watch a video. I just want to get your take on this. Somebody, Traders Beware on YouTube, put out a video called List Sellout Senators FAA Drone Surveillance. So they actually have those in the Senate that voted on this new bill, which allows drones to be used against Americans. So what I'm reading is the list of 75 U.S. senators who voted to let 30,000 drones shoot Americans in the streets. The House and the Senate voted for the passage of the FAA bill that funds 30,000 drones to surveil Americans, knowing that the majority are to be armed initially with shotgun tasers. Two Americans a week die from tasers, so these are lethal weapons. But these drones can easily be equipped with machine guns and rockets. I decided to only report the Senate vote because the bill included strong anti-union sections that forced House Democrats to vote against the overall bill. A quick glance of the Senate no votes revealed one staunch person from a strong union state who probably would have voted for the bill if it were a standalone measure without the union bashing. So then they gave a list. So you can see this on rumormillnews.com and also on Video Rebels blog on WordPress. It's vidrebel.wordpress.com. So this is being widely reported now on who voted on this, and many, many comments on the WordPress blog underneath the post speaking about traitorous actions on the part of the Senate, because this definitely shows that they don't have Americans at heart when they voted for this.
Well, you've got a lot of people sitting in those chairs right now who are owned by corporations primarily. Even when they have a good game, they speak a good game, you know, they'll tell you, well, there are compromises that politicians have to make. That's how it works. Diplomacy and detente is la, 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 la. I grew up campaigning for an uncle, the same uncle who helped to write the bill that put the EPA out there, Frank Horton. And I tell you what, politicians, and when I was growing up, were already corrupt, but there were still some people out there, I think, that owned their own souls. I don't know of many that do anymore. I think the last real single soul crossed over a couple of years back. What we have right now is we really do have a plutocracy going on here.
Right.
Failed. And it's failing very badly. You know, yesterday on the Sunday show, Here Be Monsters, I opened up late. I actually got a flat tire. It's the first time I've ever done that. And do you know the play by Shakespeare, Henry V?
Yeah, I had to study that in school, but I haven't gone back to it since then. But
I opened yesterday with the recitation by Richard Burton of St. Crispin's Day, that speech, because so many people have been saying in the mainstream media that, you know, Occupy is dead or dying or whatever, and they're slanting it, and they're saying, oh, they made such a good start, but they didn't give much, and it's all such utter bullshit that...
Oh, yeah, I agree.
I started yesterday's show with that recitation by Burton of, you know, on St. Crispin's Day with the king. And, you know, it's like holding your manhood cheap or your humanity cheap. These folks in the House and the Senate, Anita, they're on the wrong side of eternity. They're on the wrong side of love. They're on the wrong side of service to a country that elected them, you know? Today,
right.
I posted the original version of the original message that was posted on the day they put up on September 17th, the day Occupy put up their modest call to action, just 4 short months ago. They've changed. We've changed. You and I are both part of Occupy. We have changed the conversation in this country. You know, it's a corporate red herring, what they're doing right now by saying that Occupy is dead or dying. It's the winter of discontent. It's very hard to occupy in the Northeast or in the northern states, and where they are, they're getting raided today. I think Houston, was it Houston that got raided?
Yeah, I was working today, so I wasn't online for a majority of the day. So I haven't been able to update on a lot of the Occupy situation for the whole weekend. But it's like, you know, the camps have systematically, you know, just been disassembled, taken apart, and the people have scattered, but that doesn't mean the Occupy movement is dead. That just means they're licking their wounds and coming back. So,
well,
you know,
there's a May Day. Pardon me. There is a huge May Day worldwide Occupy event that's going to happen. And I think they're going to be frightened by the sounds of our feet in the streets at that point. I really do. You got to remember, we're so want to entertain ourselves to disconnect from the horrors of this world. I mean, who of us doesn't go in and just sort of flop in the evening and put on, you know, a rendering of, you know, The Hobbit or something. What is it, the Two Kings? What was the name of the movies, the trilogy?
The Hobbit, then there was the first book, the second book, which was The Two Towers, which I'm remembering off the top of my head.
Okay.
And then
the
third one is Return of the King. But what was that first book? The Hobbit was just like the prequel.
I can't remember the first book, but who I wanted to get to was Sauron. And Sauron is like in the Wall Street Towers, you know, that are right now trying to claim there's a death to the movement and the freedom that we've achieved. And with them, I mean, all of the sheriffs of Nottingham, you know, all the sheriffs of Nottingham. And the Darth Vaders. It's a political and financial cabal that we face, the Fed and the IMF and the austerity that is going on over in Europe. Athens, last night, while the Grammys were going on, my sister was reading me the tweets, and she said, "Oh, my God, they're burning the banks in Athens." And
I was watching that. Actually, on a little bit yesterday afternoon and tonight, you know, last night, because I was hoping to see a bit of the Grammys, but my computer was not cooperating. So I went back and forth to the live stream, and then after a while, the whole live stream was shut down. What I find unusual is that I've been having problems with my computer since last week, since they installed a new box. And we used to be able to call our network a name of our choice. So they replaced the box on Monday after I'd had a week of problems last Monday. We were not able to see the Super Bowl online, which should have been last Sunday. We were supposed to be able to see it online.
Yeah.
We were not able to do that. We were supposed to be able to see the Grammys online last night. They said, well, they're live streaming it. I could not watch that either. But what I find unusual is the guy came today and he admitted that nothing's under the network, your personal network name anymore. It's under a number that they pick for you that's assigned to your box. And
mm-hmm.
And then the password is also picked for you. So I thought, what the hell is going on with this? Because this is not, you know, this is this kind of monitoring is my question.
Well, and, you know, I have had it started with Facebook, and I do a lot of posting like you do on Facebook and a lot of social networking. And you probably work with a PC version, you know, of a computer. I work with a Mac PowerBook, which is about five years old, but it's a great, you know, PowerBook.
MacBook Pro. That's what I'm using, a MacBook Pro. And I've never, this computer is relatively new, and I've never had a problem with the computer before.
Well,
not this computer anyway.
Well, I'm having all kinds of difficulties, and I can't believe that, you know, I think that we are being sort of, I think there's some kind of worm at work out there that can get into anything, and it just, but then it seems as if I'm being conspiratorial with myself, you know, I don't know, but I am going to make a appointment and take my computer over to the Genius Bar and ask them to take a look at it. And I am calling the cable company, which I have no choice over here. It's Comcast. And, I mean, I'm paying $60 a month for this. I feel like I'm on dial-up. That's why I was late getting to you today.
Well, that's what I told this guy that came today. I told him,
yeah.
I said, you know, if I wanted this flow of connection, I'd still have AOL. You know,
yeah.
Because it's taken like 2 to 3 minutes to upload a page, if the page even comes through. More often than not, the pages are timing out. So
it's pretty awful. It really is, and I don't know if it's their idea of getting I don't know if your Wi-Fi router is one of theirs or is one that you provided yourself.
All the equipment and everything came from Bright House. All the equipment that we have is Bright House equipment. So I'm thinking, you know, and I'm not a technical person, but, you know, my boyfriend is, and he watches them when they do any work. And, you know, the guy that came in and replaced the box last week took my computer and did something to connect it to this new box. Then he took my phone, which is a Droid, and then he took my Kindle and did the same thing. And since he did that, the computer has not worked right since. So now the guy that came today checked everything and said everything was fine. So I felt like...
Is it fixed?
No. No.
I'm
timing out page.
Is the problem you're having and he's saying it's fine?
Yeah. We've got on the line. We've got a caller from area code 256. So I'm going to pop her in and see who she or he is. And hold on, caller. I'm clicking you in right now. Hello?
Hello. My name is Lisa. I'm a friend of Flash Silvermoon. I'm calling from North Alabama, and I've enjoyed your show so far, especially when you're talking about the Occupy movement and how the media is trying to say it's dead. Well, I'm an active member in Occupy Huntsville, Alabama. We don't have the 24-hour encampment thing, but we're active. We're not going away. Our mission is too important to cave in to the powers that be. it's nice that we have changed the political talk in the country, but I'm 52 years old, so I've been watching politics a while. And every, you know, election season, people start talking, and then maybe the talk will change, and they say all the stuff, and then when they get elected, it just kind of, they go back to their old stuff. So I don't know exactly what we can do about that, but at least we're changing the conversation. But it's going to require, in my opinion, a lot of follow through, and we can't let up, and we can't let our country keep going in the direction that it's going. Originally, why I wanted to call in, now that I got that off my chest, is, I guess I'm a woman, and yeah, like to talk. At least that's been what I've been doing lately. My concern about the chemtrails. And when I first started reading about it and looking it up online, it seemed like it was out in the deserts, and, you know, I couldn't find a lot of information about it. And then the more I kept finding information, then I started getting paranoid and, you know, wondering if it was even safe to talk about or whatever. Anyway, I did more research on Facebook and found, you know, a lot of evidence, a lot of the patents that have been issued regarding weather control devices. Anyway, they're doing it in North Alabama, you know, and I've only really been watching it here for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Like the first 3 weeks of this year, we saw no sun due to clouds. I've watched them every day that it hasn't rained in the last 3 weeks. There have been numerous aircraft spraying I don't know what in multiple pathways, and people say, oh, that's normal contrails from just airplanes. Well, I'm not in the normal pathway for aircraft over my house. You know, the only thing we get is an occasional military aircraft that's, you know, going to land out on Redstone Arsenal. So, yeah, they've been doing it here, and this sounds really bad. But one of the more immediate effects that has really angered me is we've had some beautiful sunny days that they filled up with their stupid clouds.
So basically what you're saying is that, well, first of all, congratulations on being part of the Huntsville Occupy movement. Good for you.
Thank you.
Stick with it. I wish you great motion, movement, growth, and freedom in it too. Complete your goals, but with the chemtrails, the contrails you're speaking about, and I'm not real familiar on this subject like some folks are. I know Anita knows a lot more about it than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying is that you think that it's a government project.
Yes.
To control the weather.
Or to do something. I'm thinking it has to do weather, but when you have so many aircraft that are making artificial clouds and shiny clouds and bright clouds. I grew up in Homestead, Florida, and I love watching clouds, so I know what clouds look like, and they don't look like what they're doing here. You know, I thought, okay, one day it was about, well, it was on a Friday, it was on a Saturday, 2 weeks ago. Anyway, I decided, well, I was so aggravated with it that I'll just drive and see if I can find out where it's starting. So I drove from Huntsville, Alabama, over to the Mississippi state line, and I was still going for miles and miles. Okay, so I thought, okay, so they're doing it here in North Alabama. And then, like, the following Wednesday, I was in Nashville, and they're doing the same thing over Nashville. So.
Well, I see those air, you know, those jet made contrail clouds everywhere in the country. About 4 years ago, I drove like a medicine wheel through the whole country, and everywhere I went, I saw them. So.
I'll tell you for one thing, I definitely, Lisa, I know that these things didn't exist when I was in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can look up in the sky and I can tell you what a real contrail is, but I can also show you what a chemtrail is, and I can tell you the difference. And all it takes, people say, there's so many naysayers on this, calling it a conspiracy theory. Well, you know, I believe it's a conspiracy, and, you know, I believe there are theories commit conspiracies. So I'm going to flip the script on that one. But all I know is being around flight lines and working in military intelligence from 1981 to 1985, I definitely know what a contrail is.
Mm-hmm.
But I never seen the chemtrails until I would say probably the late 90s. And I really started looking at them, I remember I was living in Clearwater, and it was a hot day, it was real sunny, and I was laying on my back on my float in the pool, and I watched a pilot lay a chemtrail down. I couldn't identify the aircraft. It was just enough out of my field of vision where I could not identify it. They never fly close to the ground, always at a high altitude. And I watched that, whatever it was, expand and expand bigger. And then I saw the clouds going in opposite directions from it. So I thought, well, whatever that is, it's heavier than the clouds, than the water moisture. So I'm watching it, and then I realized it's coming down on me. It's going to come down in this pool. And I very hastily, you know, beat feet back to my apartment, but I thought, what is that? And I happened to talk to a friend maybe a couple weeks later, and she had been tracking them for a long time. She showed me some websites. She showed me some pictures, and right then I was on the hunt for more information. So I would say this
Anita,
is around 2003 or 2004. When
Anita,
this happened.
Can you explain to the audience and to me clearly what the difference is visually between a contrail and a chemtrail?
When you see a contrail, that's a little bit of moisture, smoke, whatever you want to call it, afterburner, that goes along right behind the aircraft as it's flying. But as that aircraft is flying, there's only
it's
laying a track down, because that little bit of stuff doesn't grow. It stays about the same length, which is maybe twice as long as the aircraft itself, maybe.
Okay.
And it's not laying a track down. It's just got a little bit of afterburner stuff coming out of the back end. And that's the difference. That's how you can tell the difference. And then other people will try to tell you that, oh, it's because of the cold in the air, and it does this and it does that, and they're explaining it away scientifically. And I'm going, no, this happens no matter what the temperatures are, no matter what the weather is. In fact, there's times, there's a friend of mine just that lives here near me. She's a scientist. And she was always a little bit of a skeptic. She wants a scientific explanation for things. I understand that about her. So we happened to do a Sunday afternoon free yoga thing. I went to her house and got in her car, and we were heading to yoga, and we're in a pretty rural area. They were chemtrailing so heavy that it was in grid patterns. It was in tic-tac-toe patterns all over the sky. She noticed it.
Really?
And I said to her, I said, all you got to do is watch. And I said, if you look up, you'll see this is not normal. It's abnormal.
Regular These are not regular Air Force pilots. My little brother was Air Force. He was jet pilot instructor in Del Rio, and he flied immersed recon out of Turkey for the first war in 91, and they yanked him into the beginning of this one, too, before he retired. And he explained to me that they're just like you did, afterburner. He scrapes the sky, but it evaporates, you know, and it's not large.
Right.
It doesn't get fat. He explained.
It doesn't stay in the sky. It doesn't stay in the sky. When we came out of yoga class an hour and a half later, the whole sky was covered in clouds, the whole sky, because of what they had been doing. So all of whatever they had laid down in tracks had completely covered the sun. So I'm not, you know, there's so many different reasons as to why people say that this is happening. And the other big thing is that Congressman Kucinich, Dennis Kucinich, was the first one to actually introduce legislation with the word chemtrail in it.
Yeah.
And evidently something was wrong with the bill and the terminology, and it got thrown back, and they had to rewrite it, and the word chemtrail was taken out. In fact, I'm going to see if I can find that bill so I can give you the title of it, because I don't want to speak off the top of my head and get it wrong, but something was not right with that, and the fact that it was altered and that term was taken out is just as unusual as can be, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Dennis was never vocal about it again. Yeah, here it is.
Really?
It was the H.R. 2977. And it says he names chemtrail. Hang on, I'm going to pull it up. Representative Kucinich's H.R. 2977 names chemtrails as an exotic weapon. That was written in January 10th, 2002. And he introduced the Bill 2977 during the first session of the 107th Congress of the United States. It was called the Space Preservation Act of 2001. So, so there you go. In fact, the bill is, you can still link to the text of that bill at the Clinicon website.
Here in North Alabama, I've seen lots of parallel lines and the crisscross. One day I counted 5 aircraft doing the same thing, and that's not how they route airplanes to fly so close to each other, you know, normal aircraft. I have a grandson that lives in Wisconsin, and when he flew down for Christmas, he said, "Grandma, you know, I really wished I'd had my cell phone with me because I wanted to take pictures of the sparkly clouds." And I personally have never noticed clouds sparkling any time I'd been flying. So that was very, very disconcerting to me as well. So it's like from Wisconsin to Alabama, they're doing it too. You know, I know in Alabama, I know in Tennessee, and it's very disturbing because I don't know exactly what all it contains. I've read that it's heavy metals and so forth. I'm kind of an outdoorsy person, and I live in the country, and I happen to love fog, and there's some roads that nobody lives on that when it's foggy, I, you know, stop and get out and you know, just enjoy the fog.
I love that too. Yeah, that's great.
Listen to the coyotes or the owls or whatever. And one night I did that, and it did not feel real. It did not feel like fog, although it looked like fog. And it's like, okay, I need to get back in my car and go home because this fake stuff, I'm not sure it's safe. It's not a natural substance. And
I agree. And the fact that they're calling it heavy metals And some of this has been tested by independent researchers, too. But this, when you look up into the sky, sometimes you can see in the chemtrail haze, I call it, you can almost see like a rainbow effect. And that's usually, I don't know, scientists and other people that have analyzed this have said that the rainbow effect definitely indicates moisture, but it also can indicate the presence of heavy metals or chaff.
Right. So, I've seen that iridescence in small patches. And one day I was sitting in my garage, which is where I go to smoke cigarettes. Anyway, looking out the window, and I saw, and it looked kind of like brownish, reddish, you know, little streak. And over about 15 minutes, I realized, oh, that's a rainbow. Well, yeah, it was a rainbow, and I saw it grow, and that was really cool, and I thought, how cool. But it's like last year, I remember sitting here in the same place and seeing the same thing, and I didn't think that nature normally put rainbows in the exact same place. So, that, you know, that could have just been
all we can do at this point is let our representatives know that we know about this and
mm-hmm.
that it has to be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, any evidence that we can gather of specific operations or aircraft taking off to, you know, that, and it can't be explained what they're doing or what their mission is. These are things we need to be alerted to in our own communities, but we need to let our representatives know that we're on to them and that we know that the stories that they're giving us or the explanations to explain away what the real truth is,
mm-hmm.
we know about that. We know all about that. And it has to stop. I mean, I believe that we are being sprayed with toxins. There's toxins in our food, our food supply, our water supply, everything. It's all around us. And if doctors really want to be worth their salt, they need to be learning about the effects of these toxins on the body, because we very, very soon. Yeah, we're going to have to know how to detox.
Go ahead. I keep wondering why our country would have a nefarious, or not nefarious, a super secret kind of agenda of poisoning, spreading poison from the air. I mean, first of all, it would decimate the countryside eventually. I mean, look what DDT has done. And I'm confused as to why they would want to do it. I mean, even corporations want us alive so we can friggin' pay them with, you know, wage slavery. And it confuses me. I want more information. How can we find out just exactly what is going on?
And I agree with you on that. What is their MO on this? Their modus operandi? Why are they doing this? Because certainly these pilots and anybody that's down with these programs knows that this is going to affect generations to come, so it's going to affect their own families. So why is this being done, and what is going to be the end result is the big question. I haven't been able to figure that out either, but it's just like the Gulf oil spill. We don't have hardly any of those questions answered.
Well, that's cover-up. That's just corporate fuckery. That's cover-up. And you know, excuse me, I just dropped an F-bomb. I'm sorry. At least it won't kill you. But that's just corporate, you know. It's like watching Mitt Romney run right now. I mean, the first thing they do is they purge, then they privatize, and then they profit. And the purging has to do with the covering up. I mean, there is how many inches of Corexit and crude sitting on the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico right now? I mean,
well, watched a video tonight that was actually done by Sherry Foytlin when she was talking to the XL pipeline protesters in D.C. And she, I had no idea of the numbers of people sick, but she made a comment that 11,000 children in the Gulf of Mexico area region are sick. 11,000. Those are just the ones we know about. You know, so there could be many, many more. So this is a situation where these children are toxic, they're exposed, but they're taking in more toxin per body mass than an adult would. So it's affecting them to the point where they are very, very, very sick. I had no idea it was in those numbers, but, you know, Matt Simmons, who was the oil industry expert who was killed mysteriously in his home, many people believe it was a hit, told us for a long time in the very beginning, it's time for people in the Gulf region to evacuate. And, you know, I think by him stating that, that was probably his end, you know, because he was trying to tell people and sound the alarm and tell them the truth about what was going on here. So here we find ourselves 2 years later, and people are sick, and BP is advertising tourism. BP is paying advertising dollars for tourism here to the Gulf region.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's anything to cover up what they haven't done. You've had Sheree on. I've had Sheree on. We know she's one of the, I think you can count, Sheree Foytlin is one of the experts on where it stands, what's lagging in the whole southeastern basin right now. And she'll tell you, you know, she isn't quitting ever, I don't think. And she'll tell you that cultures are being lost, that, you know, she's focused very, very firmly on the health of Gulf Coastians who are 11,000 children does not surprise me one bit. Does it surprise you?
No, and even Kendra Arneson stated, the other Gulf Coast activist who was very highly profiled in the media because, you know, people wanted to hear her speak. They wanted truth from her. But she made that comment that there was a school of, I think it was 388 children, and they had nebulizers as medicine at the school because the kids could not breathe. I've never heard of a child on a nebulizer. I'm sorry, I've been in medical care for a long time. I know that it happens, but I've never seen a child on a nebulizer before now. I mean, I haven't seen them, but that would have been a very, very rare occurrence. For children to be put on nebulizers, there was some kind of chronic condition. So now they're using these children breathe in schools. You know, that's crazy. So
none of the politicians in any of the states, I mean, of course, I don't figure any of the Florida politicians any good for it. I really don't. I once had a kind of a hope that Charlie Crist might address it, but that's gone. And the Democrats that are the blue part of this state down here, let me tell you what, they're Republicrats, is what the majority of them are. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she has very good intentions. I don't think she's dishonest, but I think she sees politics like the rest of them do. She carries it as being of service to her country on one hand. On the other hand, she sees it as a humongous big chessboard, which is totally strategizing is the wrong way to do it. We are too far into the quagmire of species extinction for this to continue on with any leadership in any country on this planet.
Right. So Lisa, that's probably the only thing that we can do at this point is is increase awareness, talk to everybody we know. I think a very important thing about chemtrails is to make sure that we document. If we can take pictures and put times and dates and places, like exactly where we were standing, you know, time and date of the flyover, and then a picture of what happens like 15 minutes later when that chemtrail is expanded and when it's starting to fall, so people can actually see the progression of these things, because they're, and you know what's amazing is that the younger generation, they think these chemtrails are normal because this is what
they
they've
do,
always
seen
in the sky.
You're right. They
you
do.
Know?
Yeah. Because it
they
is like anything.
Yeah, they think that since they've already always seen it in the sky since they were young, that these things are normal and that we should not be alarmed about it. We who are, you know, calling our leaders on this. And,
right.
And
well,
go ahead.
My concern is that, okay, we can talk to our friends and the one-on-one thing, just like spreading the messages that, you know, Occupy movement is bringing up. But, you know, Occupy people, we still get a lot of hatred when we're out holding our signs and doing different things. We got treated like crap when I went up to Occupy Congress, you know, last month. And we get labeled as a bunch of, you know, dirty hippies that need to get a job. And then what? Yeah, how do we, anybody you mention chemtrails to, they look at me like I'm a nut. I don't know how we can get maybe educated scientists or whomever to, you know, research
well,
this.
You know, Lisa, Anita and I are not looking at you like you're a nut. And I don't think everyone in the crowd was probably looking at you like you were a nut. But it is strange. It is, that's why you have to talk about it. You have to be courageous and move forward with what you think is the truth. You know, speaking truth to power, I think the first time that I had heard that in a long time was when I was talking to Anita a couple of months ago. And it's basically what we're trying to do by putting on all of these different radio shows are really quite wonderful because they're a drumline of this kind of information that, you know, needs to be out there because the mainstream media is not going to put it out there. It's about corporate messaging on that. And almost everything is shaded. Or it drives you to a certain goal of purchasing or what have you, or purchasing through your doctor. Do you notice that? Buy pills. I mean, but I'm sorry, I don't mean to digress. As Anita says, it really is about bringing the awareness up.
Okay,
right.
Then. In trying to bring awareness and those hurdles that we just talked about, how do we make the call to action for people to turn off their televisions or their radio, turn off the football game or whatever, and do something instead of just, oh, yeah, oh, well, too bad. I don't know. It makes, you know, it's really frustrating.
You can't take on that heavy a load of it. You've just got to be good with doing your best and being in your own zone and knowing I'm doing my job. And even if I'm doing it, hell, honey, even if you're just sitting alone in Huntsville with an Occupy T-shirt, an Occupy sign, you know, there are people who are doing that in towns in this country, and they are the most courageous souls I can think of tonight.
Right. I know that a lot of people, they are so down with Occupy. I am too, but I'm in a situation where I can't even get to the one that's local to me because I've been unemployed since October, and I don't even have the gas money to go down the road, let alone go 40 miles into my metro area. But I do try to increase awareness with other people about what Occupy is doing and what their mission is. And, you know, I spread the word online as best I can. So I think people are in a situation, especially in this downturning economy, that they do what they can do when they can do it. And like Gwen said, taking on the heavy load of trying to help everyone and be in every situation and take care of every cause. Well, with me, I just had to back up a little bit because I was losing my own life. I found an extremely effective outlet by doing this radio show, and it's something that I can do from right here at home. So that's been very helpful to me. But, you know, if I had my choice, I'd be down there camping out, but I can't do that. Number two, I'm the breadwinner, and I can't take that risk of going to jail. I cannot. So, you know, people do what they can do. Now, I can sit here and write a very, very incredible letter to, you know, letters to the editor. I can pass messages online, you know.
You can tweet. I know that Twitter is an electronic betrayer. However, they are also huge. I've been spending the last week mainly on Twitter because I'm trying to build my business account up. So it means that I'm not so nasty about the politics, but I am definitely very Occupy as well as Daughters of ISIS. And I gotta tell you, people who are definitely understand the truth and see what's going on, especially those people with Occupy, you get them. You see them clearly right in the moment. And then the other folks who are still kind of going, well, Obama's got his problems, but, the lesser of two evils kind of categorization, you see that there too, you know. But I have to tell you this, people are getting more and more hip, and when people start tweeting and talking about things like they have for the last 24 hours with all of the demonstrating and rioting that's going on in the streets of Greece and Portugal and Lisbon, and there's one other city that's being hit in Belgium right now. Do you hear about the Belgian firefighters spraying the cops?
No.
With a fire hose. Yeah, the austerity measures. This is all about austerity. The Greeks set fire to banks in Athens last night. I am so, first of all, concerned for the safety of these people because these are the occupiers over there. They are in harmony with Occupy Wall Street. And it's just stunning to me that they're taking these risks. Now they're calling it in the mainstream media looting and rioting. But one man's and this comes back to haunt me because when I came out of college, I began to write on contemporary terrorism. I mean, my first publishing was Mother Jones on that. I got to tell you something. At the time, I said, you know, I don't want to hear about the lack of innocence, because there are innocents. And one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. But boy, has that one come home to roost, hasn't it?
Right, right. What do you think of the violence that the Greeks have been using, on each other? Because it's also two different political parties that are involved in this as well, and they're fighting one another in addition to fighting, against
the parliament, yeah, and the austerity. I am dismally disappointed. I the diversity of tactics that they speak about out in Oakland, I am not for. I'm for nonviolent resistance. I am not for the Molotov cocktail. No, ma'am. I'm a healer. Anita, that's who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm a witch. You know, I'm a woman who has decided to live her life as a teacher and a healer. I sit at a bench, and when I create these bottles, I don't do it to get paid a bunch of money. I do it with love and intentions to
to change, to make a positive change in this world, because it's a time and place for it. We're at the edge of evolution here. You know?
Right.
I'm part of the vanguard.
2012 and it's 2012 and it's already happening. It's happening right to all of us as we sit here and talk about it. 2012 is happening, and it's definitely shift. And I'm happy for the shift, but that doesn't mean it isn't going to come with a whole set of problems.
A lot of shift, yeah. And these are the problems.
Going to go along with that shift or not. You know, there's still... Go ahead.
Well, these are the catalysts of change, but there's also these wonderful things that have been happening sometimes for years that... I think this year we will begin to make sense of and work. I mean, first of all, I don't know how much focus you've paid on or how much clarity you have or I have or anyone has, really. But we know that there's something special going on, especially in England with crop circles. Those are messages. And they're done with sound, I think. Of course, no one really knows because no one all these years has been actually able to completely capture the whole thing. But we know a great deal about it. And I think it's the earth. I think it's interdimensional. I think it's sound. But the other thing is, too, all of a sudden the earth is creating sounds all over the world. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Exactly, because I've been... Lisa, have you seen any of the videos about that as well?
About what?
About the sounds, these unusual sounds that are actually... that people are hearing all over the world. It's almost like...
Oh, they're recording them. They're recording them all over the world. And most of them are happening on ley lines. They're leaving that little piece of information out. There is a radio show... online, Henrik over in Sweden does. It's called Red Ice. And he just did a show with a fellow who has a project down in Peru. And I forget his name, I'm sorry, but if you look up Red Ice Radio, you'll find it immediately. And you can go listen to the first hour for free on this show about the sound that are happening all over, and he plays them. And they sound like something from a Star Trek movie or Avatar or something. And it's the Earth that is making this because they're doing their research and they're going and they're looking. And they can feel the sound coming up and they record it and they know it's coming right up out of the Earth. How's that for...
Queer. Wow.
That's pretty scary.
I
think it's cool.
I hadn't heard that, but that's very, very encouraging that maybe Mother can help us when, you know, I'm a paramedic. Well, I can't work because of disability, but, you know, paramedic for a long time, volunteer firefighter, was in the Army Reserve, whatever, whatever. So I'm like the... You go in there it's emergent, you know, and I think that, you know, a lot of the political issues in our country and especially the environment, we don't have a lot of time, you know, this stuff is happening and we need to stop it as soon as we can. So that gets, kind of frustrating. So it's very encouraging to know that maybe there is a power or a something bigger than me, and maybe Mother Earth can help stop this stuff. So yes, thank you for that. That helps me feel better and less overwhelmed.
Well, you know, too, tomorrow being Valentine's Day, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. There is a worldwide, and I don't think it came through Chopra, but his center is putting the info out like a lot of others. I think really someone in the Ascension movement somewhere started this, but tomorrow is a 24-hour long
hold the resonance to heal Mother Earth. And the visualization, the healing meditation, it's a planetary worldwide 24-hour meditation. Now that you should know that it's just to be mindful all day long, and they want people to use sound. So if you can, you know, or any kind of, everybody thinks you have to use that om sound to resonate, but you don't. Use whatever sound, hail, sing rock and roll. It doesn't matter, but using sound with intention and visualization and putting, you know, that white or pink light around your own heart center and seeing a tangible, you know, light stream flowing out of your heart center and into the Earth Mother and to the heart of the planet, that iron ore crystal heart of the planet, and wrapping it with pink light and connecting that way. That's the healing meditation tomorrow on Valentine's Day.
Are we supposed to be doing that collectively at a time? Or
it's supposed to be a 24-hour one from the information that Ruth Ann gave me on my show last week. But she was very quick to say that, you know, even if you're just pausing throughout the day, there's several, I think, it's the ascension crowds, and I think all over the planet these different pockets of people are sitting and dedicating 24 hours to this. But the more people who stop during the day, and like tonight before I go to sleep, or, you know, when I see that it's turned midnight, I'm going to, you know, find the quiet space, hook up with it, spend a few moments or as much time, or even fall asleep that way, connecting into it, resonating with it, visualizing that pink light around my heart and connecting it to the planet and the heart, that iron ore crystal heart of the mother in the middle of the planet, making that connection with the intention of healing the Earth Mother, and realizing at the same time that there are thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are dedicating and doing the same thing. And I will continue to do that until midnight tomorrow or the next day. I don't know how you do that one. Midnight is the crossover line. But from midnight to midnight, to the best of my ability during the day, I'll sit back, take a moment, hook up again. You follow?
Yeah, I'm just going to do, like, I'm going to be driving for a party tomorrow, so I'm just going to, like, put in my favorite CDs and just sing. So that'll be part of it, with intention.
Yeah, and visualize that hookup between your heart and the heart of the planet.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, and I do have some of the reclaiming chants, too, which are very powerful, and I've listened to them at different times playing in the car. And actually, I get to a point where I'm chanting and I, you know, it, before I know it, I'm where I need to be. It's like the driving time is shortened somewhat.
Oh, that's an old trick, man. I mean, you know, that's where I used to channel a lot of my information was when I was driving. I mean, It's a very, and you have to ground yourself to a certain extent because it becomes very out of body. It just seems extraordinarily easy to hook up when you're driving.
or to, you know, a couple times I've actually been singing while driving and then not realizing that I'm going like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, I got a ticket a couple times for doing that. So I have to be very careful that I don't do that. Well, you know, I'm an Aries. I like speed, you know, and my foot is made of lead. So if I'm driving, generally I'm driving fast. So, But yeah, there's so much news going on. I mean, the news, like we touched a little bit on the, you had told us about Belgium. We spoke about Athens. We spoke about, there's so many things happening. The sounds, the mysterious sounds.
And I'd like to say this, if I can. And I'm completely breaking from the wonderful energy of visualizing healing the earth, which I'm going to do tomorrow, beginning at midnight tonight. But before that happens, I am going to say this. I'm going to say that the man who calls himself the president of Syria is a hideous monster. He is a hideous monster and a murderer. This guy is responsible for the murder of so many of his people. Assad.
And tell us, now he is the son of, when I was working in military intelligence, we were watching his father very closely. At the time, there were missiles that were actually put into place, Soviet missiles at the time. This was during the Cold War. So they were literally threatening our reconnaissance mission in the Eastern Mediterranean. And at one point, I remember a Navy pilot was shot down, and Jesse Jackson flew over to Syria to speak with the leader and have the pilot released and flown back to the States, and he was successful in doing that. So there was a lot of political back and forth between the U.S. government and Syria in the early 80s, and those were just some of the things that hit the media, the press, the mainstream media. So now the country is dealing with the son of that particular leader, and he was groomed to do what he's doing.
He's
but then again, we don't
monster.
Know how much the Western powers are in power over these different coups that are happening all over.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. I really do. You know, not only is that going on in Syria, and it has been going on for almost a year or
mm-hmm.
better. It's been going on since Mohamed Bouazizi. I mean, you know, but Cairo is on fire again. I mean, people are in Tahrir Square. There's a countrywide strike called for right now, ongoing. They're trying to get the military out of there. It's like they got Mubarak out and the military sat in, and now they've taken over and it isn't going so well. And today too, Obama, everybody who is touting Obama for giving women a better choice, a solution to this reproductive. I mean, my God, I was in college. I you know, my mother marched for women's rights. This is just so, I mean, what are we doing having these conversations just for politics? And Obama gets, you know, a stand-in kind of a play going on where, well, he placates the Catholics, and yet he makes sure that women can get from their employers a paid-for form of birth control. But on the backside of that hand is the incredible cuts he just made to Medicaid and Medicare, and they're not talking.
Hmm.
I mean, and Medicaid is my only, you know, relief right now. So I'm like
so this,
a little concerned.
This is like not even part of the conversation, then. It's just like,
it's the only way I heard about it was I caught the last end of Young Turks and I saw a tweet by Oberman. So
I'm sure Running on Current tonight sometime will be Overman talking about it. But, you know, they're the only ones who do. You know, also, we're finally, the dead in Afghanistan amongst our side is finally, you know, taking a toll on the mercs, the mercenaries, the what they call the contractors now. There's more deaths among the contractors this last year than there has been among our service people.
Wow.
Yay. I say yay. Because they can get Blackwater and those other contractors, yeah, that you call mercenaries, yes, they are. And they can get away with crimes. They can get away with murder and not be held
over
accountable.
There.
Yeah,
yeah,
over there.
It's
yeah.
quite true. But you know what? All the independent contractors are not. You know, there's guys that work for Halliburton that are over there. That's the biggest company is Halliburton. And while I don't like to see Dick Cheney, I mean, that's why Mitt Romney's running. He wants to get some of what Dick Cheney got, you know, in office. I don't like to see, but these guys, it's like, you know, they have a lot of people, independent people they hire, like truck drivers that are over there who have families back home in Texas type of thing. And these guys are not bastards. They're not mercs. They're just truck drivers who had no other choice, so they went abroad to make $70,000 for the year in a very dangerous circumstance so that their family might eat, you know? And
right.
That side of it, it's very convoluted. War is not as black and white as we wish it could be. I mean, I have a friend who helped create the effigy of Obama to burn in Pakistan yesterday. So, you know, life is no longer black and white, and what kills me, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, Anita, what kills me is that the leadership, that 1%, we are the 99%, but that 1%, I mean the true 1%, the Bilderbergs, the Barclay Bank, the Vatican, you know, board on the bank, Vatican Banco, the real 1%, you know, over here, Goldman Sachs, those boards. It just kills me that they don't see that the world is communicating with one another, that social networking and, you know, if it weren't for Facebook, I wouldn't know my friend Sabina in Pakistan. I wouldn't know that her neighbor was killed by a drone my president rained down on her neighbor and her grief and horror in that. You know what I'm saying? We are no longer confined. We have a planetary consciousness, and it's called the internet, and we're making use of it, you know, and it kills me that the 1% is not getting hip to that. I always thought that that end of it was a little smarter, but they don't seem to be, or maybe they're scared of it. I don't know.
Well, and I didn't, you know, I said yay, not that I don't wish harm on people. I'm
well,
the one that you know, crawls in the cars that are burning and pulls people out. I'm into the healing. But, you know, having also been military, at least the contractors get paid and have the benefits. You know, our military, our soldiers, they're chattel, they're cannon fodder. And as long as it's the military people that are dying, that can be covered up real well. We don't see the flag-draped coffins. But perhaps since it's non-military personnel, maybe that will get some people's attention and say, hey, maybe we should do something different. But and I need to get off the phone here, but I do want to say something else that's kind of maybe unrelated to this present conversation is, you know, in the beginning of Occupy, there was a lot of people that were young people, And I was really excited to see the young people taking some action and doing, you know, bringing all these political things and whatever to light. And at least in Huntsville, they, you know, they've gotten busy going back to school or with their family or whatever. And so while that's a little bit disappointing, I'm a grandmother, and I think that it's time for the grandmothers, whether you are literally a grandmother or spiritually a grandmother, for the grandmothers to stand up and bond together and make the change, because we have the power of generations past and of our kids and our grandkids and generations future. And I think that if the grandmothers can do it, I have a great belief in that. And I thank you for listening to me and answering my questions on this program. And I think these are great shows that I've been listening to on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you so very, very much.
Well, Lisa, thank you for calling in, and feel free to call in any other time about any other topic. We'd love to hear from you too on other topics as well. So, but I'll get with you personally on a personal level about what we need to do about the chemtrails too, and I'll direct you to a few sites that you might want to check out. So,
all right.
So we'll
thank
definitely
you.
Talk.
Right.
Good night. Okay, you still there with me?
I'm with you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Okay, I just let me check and see that the soundboard's fine. Yep, everything's cool here. But wow, that was that's really bothered her for some time, and she had contacted me personally, and I hadn't had a chance to get back with her on the phone. But we are going to be talking sometime in the future, and she is also a veteran, so these are things that you know, she's pretty well aware of the description that I had in regards to this, because I'm sure she's done some, you know, she's done some research too. But you know, we're in some very, very interesting times. I can't describe it any other way. And the Mother Earth is making her sounds, and you know, I just believe that the corporations are our enemy, and it's unfortunate that our government, our own leaders, no longer represent us, but the corporations. But I keep saying to myself, how long is this going to go on before the change happens? Because a change has got to come, but how is that going to happen? Any ideas on that?
You know, it's like we're saying, there's all of these things that are going on right now are my partner, Asa, he will say, my business partner, Asa is my best friend, too, for many years. And he's called it a few times. Professionally, he's a psychic. And he called Obama winning it. He also called that, he said that he just saw Obama standing in his office with his hand on his head, you know, like squeezing his the bridge of his nose, like, oh, please, just walk away. It's like, he called that one. He's pretty good on hitting things, and he will always bring up this and say, and I think he's right, that the things that are going on right now are catalysts of change, and they're huge. They potentially are huge, but I get more of a positive feel. I don't see World War III coming. I do see enough hardship out there, but that hardship is the shift. It's the catalyst that will bring about the changes, because people are going to have, they're getting to the point. I mean, the Occupy movement is the first and best
manifestation I have seen of the evolution of humanity, because people are standing up and saying on a worldwide level, I've had enough. That's it. I've had enough. And when you take a look at the positive things that are happening, I mean, I think it's Trish Springsteen who talks about the possibilities of biodiversity in reclaiming the seas. That's a reality. That's a reality. That's something that we can look at and smile on and say there's an opportunity and a chance there. And there are several, maybe, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but maybe it's through the screwing around, the dicking around with these chemtrails, that possibility for repairing our ozone, or, you know, I mean, there are possibilities. I don't think, honestly, that that's what's going on right now, but we don't know. We really don't know. I'd really like to know what that is. The crop circles and the sounds that are going on. If it, you know, the consciousness of this planet, the living consciousness, the speaking consciousness of Gaia is the harnessing of all our consciousness, our collective consciousness as one. You know, I mean, that's the basic there. And she does speak out. And I think that these sounds, as well as the elements, of course, but these sounds have something to do with it. And I think that the crop circles need to be revealed. And there's great hope and possibility in that. There's great hope and possibility in the unseen. Because in making the unseen seen or manifest, like figuring out, revealing what the crop circles actually are, we know that they're messages. We know that they're equations, you know? We just don't know how to apply them. And you can't think that 26 years of crop circles of such precision and calculation are going to go for naught. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
There's also the fact that much of the old world, they call it antediluvian, you know, before the flood.
Before the flood, right.
That old world, that Atlantean, Lemurian world, is beginning to resurface. Look, they found Troy, you know?
Right, exactly.
It's all being, that's why I love reading people like Graham Hancock, you know? And the calculations of ancient people that were smart enough to create the zero, like the Maya, you know, and their calendar. And it has nothing to do with doomsday. It has to do with an alignment and the magnetic qualities of that alignment with the heart of heaven. And if you just go over to the Science Channel on your cable and take a look at all the information right now that they're running, all these shows on black holes, and you start doing the shamanic work of that, the relationship between a black hole as the heart of heaven and the heart of this planet and the shifting and changing and then reading up on, you know, everything they've discovered in the last 5 years about black holes and singularities and the complete transformation of time, place, and energy. I mean, you know, hey, listen, there's possibilities here. It ain't the end.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking it's a change in consciousness. It's definitely going to be an increased awareness. And, you know, maybe, of course, the indicators, including the Mayan calendar and all of that, you know, they were indicating that and not some doomsday, you know, vision that people
said.
I mean, I'm seeing us moving in a positive way forward. I think the only thing that I don't like is the violence, but I keep saying to myself, how much must the people take before that's going to end up happening, where people are going to feel that they need to fight back? I don't condone that. I don't agree with it. But, you know, the people can only take so much.
It takes, you know how much courage it takes just to go and sit in an Occupy group. You know how much courage it takes to, you know, I think about, it's strange to me that people don't really understand or take a look at, they don't remember how hard it was on veterans who returned in the 60s and 70s for more, you know? But we finally woke up to that. I would think that we're a little smarter than that now. And things are happening at a very, very quick pace. Have you heard the term accelerated very much lately?
Yeah.
The Maya elders talk a lot about that acceleration point. Well, we're coming to the end of a 26,000-year journey, you know? We've been through every constellation. We're at a point of evolution just as a natural phenomenon, you know? The astrologers call it a great year. We begin in Aquarius and we end in Pisces. Well, we're re-entering Aquarius right now. We have done with Pisces. Pisces is an age of belief, so we got the belief in our back pocket now, too. We are entering an age that is about knowledge. It's about the tangible experience. It's about being fully in ourselves, you know. It's about taking responsibility for ourselves on all levels and shedding this crutch that we use, this opiate that the overlords will use called religion, you know? It's about being completely in your own power and taking responsibility for that and creating a world from that place, you know? I think
it's amazing that you say this too, because, you know, here for the past several years I've been very, very involved in politics, and I've worked in three campaigns, including my own, which I won. So election season 2012. I've never been in a situation like this where I've applied for two different jobs with two different campaigns, didn't get either one, and now the message is, this one you got to sit out. You're not going to be effective, you know, doing any kind of work except what needs to be done within your own environment, within your own home front. So, and people may say that that's not a good way to be, but I'm not, I don't think I'm voting. I think I'm sitting this one out. I'm going to be focusing on the home front, growing food, keeping it local. I just don't see what kind of change that we can implement by voting in a system that is so corrupt and fraudulent. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter who gets in there. It doesn't matter who they've already elected. It doesn't matter. Because the same policies will be implemented no matter what. I don't want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of the change about keeping it local. I'm very involved with the Transition Town movement, which we have an initiating group here in Tampa now. I'm picking vegetables one day a week at the community gardens. And my whole life since I've become unemployed has changed. And I don't see a situation where I'm going to have work anytime in the near future unless it's some kind of work that I create. So
yeah.
I'm in pretty much a transitory state myself and definitely in a situation of flux and lots of change and coming and going. And you know what? A couple months ago, I was freaked out about it, and now I'm just day by day. Just, you know, I thought getting these jobs would be the answer, you know. And, of course, I was devastated when I didn't get the jobs. But now it's I've resigned myself to the fact that that wasn't meant for me, that my destiny over the next year or two is one of a completely different path than I've been on. And that's okay, because I'm open to now learning that. But
you're in the right frame of mind. You're open to whatever the challenge is, and you're meeting the challenge. It's not like you're politically inactive. You are an activist. Your voice is banging a drum on this radio show every Monday evening, and you're on other radio shows too, joining the collective on that and putting out an awareness from the wisdom that you have to give on it. You're not taking a back seat. You may be sitting out the election for just the reasons that you put forth, and I certainly sympathize and see what you're saying. I'm, you know, right now I don't know who I'm going to vote for. As far as president goes, I'm formulating and doing the research and supporting, you know, getting ready to support someone local. But I understand what you're saying, and I think a lot of people are coming to these, because that's the way I've been living since I moved back to Florida before then. I mean, I've worked for myself really for the last 20 years, both here and abroad, and it isn't easy, Anita, but it's certainly adventureful.
Yeah, and I'm sure much more rewarding than what I was doing because, I was doing a job that was supposed to be rewarding and provided me with not only money but the feeling that I was doing good in the world. But unfortunately, the work that I was doing was not fulfilling me as a person. I was being devalued. And now my question is, if you want me to be a consultant for your campaign, in other words, if you want me to do this for you or that for you, what is the even rate of exchange? I'm not going to be so free with what I've offered in the past for nothing, for no money at all, you know? People have called me up and picked my brain about campaigns and things like that. No, not anymore. If you want some information from me, then there has to be an even rate of exchange or you're taking up too much of my time. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that has to, you know, now that I'm not working, that has to be first and foremost, you know. People these days, I'm finding a big shift. If they're not down with what we're doing and our sense of awareness in regards to 2012 and what's happening locally and building local community, I find that they're in search of something for little or nothing. And I think people are hurting everywhere financially, but if they can get a service from you or me or somebody else for little or nothing, they're going to attempt to do that. And now I'm just going to say, sorry.
You know,
I'm not
funny.
It's very funny because in a particular instance, there's a relationship with what you just said and the conclusion I came to from my own bench today about something. And, you know, all things are synchronistic, so I'd have to say that both you and I have made some positive right choices on that front. That I think
right.
You're correct. I think you're absolutely correct. And I don't come at it from, you know, just anger or anything like that. I was actually ticked off when I first came to the conclusion because somebody ticked me off, and I realized, well, wait a minute, let's analyze this. But my point overall here is that there's a lot of positive going on out there, but I find it extraordinary, and it we really do have to stay upbeat. You and I both know that, you know, the physical laws are always going to apply, Anita. What goes around comes around is basically what it is. It's a reciprocality with the universe. You and I are practitioners. We know this. It's difficult sometimes because you think, my goodness, I've done the good things. What is the problem? You know, it's a corrupt universe.
I feel like I've given and given, and then,
yeah,
you know, too often I'm deprived of what I need. And this was the situation in this work situation, you know, taking care of this patient for 3 years, where I was deprived. I was there for 3 or 4 days a week and nights, and then I didn't have any personal time. Then I'd come home, and the time had to be devoted to the home front, and I was getting very bitter and angry about the whole thing. I was saying, what about me? When do I get my time? Because I'm always making everything right for everybody else. What about me? And I thought, no, I have to turn over this new leaf. You know, I'm coming up into my Saturn, you know, my second Saturn return. And, I need me time. And never again will I let somebody dictate to me what I should be doing for them for very little, you know, or no reciprocality of anything, you know. So now it's my turn. And I have to be, that's the one thing I have to be selfish about.
Well,
so,
and I think a lot of people need to hear this conversation because there's a lot of people that are out there who are wondering, you know, what the heck is going on with the world and why am, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of folks who are sort of lost in between. But they're also, no one gives up because you just can't, you know?
Right.
I will say this. It's strange to me, and as I was, you know, the positive aspects we have to create, we have to grasp the ones that are there for us. It's almost like looking at one of those Kafakata things from the little kid's book that says, find the bunny in this picture. You know,
it's like, right, right.
Find the good stuff in this picture. Well, okay, you can. But it's stunning to me that Athens, Greece, the absolute cradle of where the thinking and the philosophy and all the good stuff that the Romans grasped onto and created an empire with, and we in turn have done the same with, you know, we call it democracy or whatever you want to call it. It's a governance of people that's equitable and fair at its root. And Athens is on fire, and people are being, you know, decimated by banks claiming the need for austerity measures so they can get their pound of flesh and coin in the hand from whole countries of people. And so in Lisbon and in Athens and in Belgium, people are saying, F you, and they're in the streets and they're screaming, and other countries, the people of Germany, are not saying we shouldn't help them. It's the banking community and the politicians of Germany who are saying, well, we can't bail everybody out, you know. As far as the people of Germany are concerned, they're in the streets too. There's a huge anonymous contingent in Germany. Occupy movement is very strong in Berlin and Munich. It's
so there's a lot of places around the world where, you know, we may think that these countries are fantastic and great places to live, but obviously the people there that are actually living there are not very happy. We're seeing that definitely in Europe since they became part of the European Common Market many years ago and all went to the same, most of the countries went to the same monetary system.
Capitalism just ain't working.
The thing is
that the lifestyles, the ancient, you know, we have, if you've ever gone to the country in Italy or in France and seen how they live traditionally in their villages and their homes and their small towns and overgrown towns, I wouldn't call them cities, because I wouldn't insult them that way. If you could see the life that they live, and it's every bit as modern and technically advanced as us, it's just not overgrown with gaudy plastic Chinese-made tchotchkes that fill their home, you know, I mean, there's a quality standard that's very different. And for the first time in my life in the last year, I have thought seriously what life would be like outside of this country, because it is what they call these days one hot mess here. And people, especially kids, don't have a grasp of what really counts, you know, and the sustainability of a town or city. I mean, I had a conversation today where it was like, well, they just don't have enough large, you know, the mega store, the Walmart is not here type of thing. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, that's why I'm where I'm at, you know, I'm in a little old Florida town. But it has its drawbacks, obviously, because people want, you know, that instant, you know, Walmart life.
It's a consumer-driven society, so, you know,
it's not all about what you can buy and what you can acquire. Yeah.
You know,
it's not that way in completely in European countries. In some of their larger cities, a lot of that Americanization goes on, but not always. It's stunning to me. All of that is going on over there. All of that eye candy for the camera to show, but isn't being shown here. It is over there. If you take a look at Russia Today or the Real News or Democracy Now, you get an eyeful. But here we're talking about how the economy has turned around and things are picking up and the unemployment is down. And who is it real? I'm like, is this live or is this Memorex?
Right.
It's an election year, that's for sure. But
you know, I was just talking to Leon about that earlier tonight or today. We were talking about the different signs we had seen or not seen. It's almost like where we are, it doesn't even seem like there's an election going on. I think we've seen Ron Paul signs, and we saw... Leon, we saw one Romney sign, didn't we?
Yeah.
One Romney sign. And I saw another sign out in the country driving to a girlfriend's house way out in the country for Newt Gingrich. and then I saw one other sign for Santorum. Those are the only signs, maybe in all, maybe 10. And it does not feel like an election year, because this is not what people are talking about. They don't want to even get into a conversation about who's going to win and who's on a debate or whatever, because, you know, when you think about it, 17% of the people on a given election vote. 17% think that they are selecting their president. The rest of the people are so disenfranchised at this point that they're feeling like I'm feeling. It doesn't matter. Why should I waste my time going to the polls? The person's already been selected.
Or they simply don't care. Or, you know, I hear you.
They're caught up in the activities of daily living, just trying to work two or three jobs if they've still got work, the small amount that still have work. Then there's others of us that are trying to find work and desperately trying to, you know, get whatever little jobs we can get, and then acquire food and keep the lights on and everything else. It's not first and foremost in many people's minds what's going to be happening in November of this year. And, you know, the black communities especially have been disenfranchised for so long that it really doesn't matter. And most of them will flat out tell you, I haven't voted in years. Most of them will say that to you. You know, so
last year's election, see, down here it wasn't like that. I can't tell you how.
Yeah,
much
now
I
many,
believe.
Many people. There were many black people that actually rose up and voted for Obama. Yeah, just in this last election. But you know, now I think many of those people are realizing that was just a big, you know, excuse the French, but you know, like a huge clusterfuck. So there we go for my F bomb of the evening.
Well, we're at the top of the hour. So
good luck to anybody who thinks that they can change the world by voting, because I no longer hold any stock in it, and I'm probably not going to be participating. So, with that said, the change has to come from us, and I've said this before: the change comes from us. It's not ever going to come from the top down. It has to come from the bottom up. That's the only way. I hold great stock in people and people power, but I do not hold stock in what's happening at the governmental level. And we have to change our government, or we have to be the government. But the government are not those buffoons.
I think your local sustainability is a true statement. I know Maureen Bernardo online, good friend online over in California, they're doing the same thing. I do want to stop on the positive side. We do have a lot of signals from the Earth Mother herself. This is a changing of the cosmic guard. We're headed towards an incredible alignment, and I think it's our job to also provide people with not only that, you know, banging the drum, but I think it's our job to also say all the good stuff too. And we keep searching for it, gosh knows, you know, but it's out there. And at Valentine's Day at midnight, remember your mother, connect to her heart, and sing a great song for her.
Sing and chant and hum all day tomorrow for the Earth Mother. And, you know, there's another thing I've been doing, too. I've been doing bees, like bee sounds, like buzzing and vibrating with the back of my throat. And that's very powerful, too. So for anybody out there who has studied bee magic, that's really, really important, is to tone like them, because, the world needs bees. And I don't think they've died off. I think they've gone someplace safe. So we need to call them back, you know?
There you go. I agree.
We need to call them back.
Because
we need them to pollinate. We need We need their energies, their worker energies. We're going down to the last 48 seconds. I wanted to thank.
It was a pleasure, Anita. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show, Gwen. And I want to thank all of our sponsors, Daughters of Isis, Roundtree 7, and Here Be Monsters, and the Hoodoo blog. And we're going to be chanting and humming and buzzing and all kinds of things tomorrow. Vibrate with sound all day tomorrow for assistance with the Mother Earth and to keep our own selves aligned with what's going
Absolutely.
On. The earth is making sounds, and we need to make sounds and generate that energy. So good night, everyone, from Wise Women Media. We love you on Valentine's Day. Good night.
Good night.